Welcome back to Weebology, my beautiful students. I am your time traveling professor, Ricky.
Yo, what's up, folks? I am your professor whose mettle was tested by his co-professor, Ricky. He started this by saying, I'm going to get cozy. Give me the blue blanket. And I said, oh, you don't think I can get cozy, too?
And he took it so heatedly, but I've never seen the man more cozy. He actually
been more cozy.
He tested his mettle. He had his mettle tested, and my God, he passed with flying colors.
You remember that one episode I had that really scrunchy jacket on that made noise?
Is it weird that I actually do? Yeah, I totally do.
I was more comfortable at that point, but
would you say this is top three comfy mode?
This is definitely top three. Other one that was great is when we fully were wearing the blanket.
That's true. This is definitely top one. I don't know. I'm in a mode today. I'm in a good mood today. We were traveling.
I woke up like straight up an hour ago, so.
Wow. Yeah. I texted him early this morning at like 8:30, and I watched an entire show today, which we will talk about, but I texted him at 8:30. Hey, man, you want to record today at like this time? And I didn't get a response for like 6 hours. And I'm like, hey, bud, like, are you good? And he's like, fuck you, dude. I'm on vacation. Like, yeah, I can sleep when I want, how I want, where I want, who I want.
I was sleeping as a little kitten, all warmed up. And,
you know, I like this for you. I'm glad you get that. You've been hustling lately. And I wanted to know about that. You have been. You have been.
Yeah, I guess at work.
Yeah. So, I mean,
it's been tough, guys.
But, I mean, it's
whole geopolitical.
Geopolitical? I hope everyone had a great 4th of July weekend last weekend. That's right. We know we're time traveling. We're recording the second episode first, knowing when these are going to release. But given this is the second of two.
Yeah, a little behind the scenes for y'all.
We are transparent in the lab. We finally mastered time travel. Fun fact, the secret is the blanket. I don't know how else to tell you guys that, but that's how it is. You got to get a blanket, a banana, and a microwave. But all that being said, Ethan, what are we doing today?
So today we are doing the Pitch-A-Ditch Redux.
I hate this. You're already kicking off in 3 minutes with the accent.
This is my character.
What's your character's name?
His name is...
Yeah?
Gary.
Gary who?
Gary...
Put you on the spot there.
Sandoval.
Sandoval?
Of course.
I love it.
Anywho, so what we're doing today is we are doing our Pitch-A-Ditch Redux.
Yes. So
turns out accent plus words I don't say that often. Kind of tough.
So we're doing the Pitch-A-Ditch Redux. If you listened to a couple episodes ago, Ethan and I pitch each other a show and try to convince each other the best we can to watch this show. And then we come back after reviewing and viewing all of the show as much as we wanted to watch and decide whether it is a pitch or a ditch. Ethan, the show you suggested to me was Black Lagoon, and I suggested to you...
Cagister of an Insect Cage?
I think they use Cagister. I've also been fuzzy on the pronunciation of that.
Here's the thing.
Yes.
The title's fucking stupid.
I actually...
Can we agree?
It rolls kind of well. Cagister of an Insect Cage.
Yeah, but
boom,
like,
boom, boom.
If you hadn't literally just watched it an hour ago, would you remember that?
Absolutely not.
That's what I'm saying. I think it is the most involved title I've heard in a long time. And it's not like it's a...
It's not overly clever.
It's just
right?
that it's made up.
Yeah,
So it's like, what the fuck is a Cagister, you a-holes?
Well, you're going to find out today on the episode.
Yeah, true.
So which one do you want to start with first? What are you feeling?
I guess let's start with the Cage of an Insects.
The Cage of Insects. Okay.
Yes.
Ethan, how did you feel?
So I want to preface this by saying, if you guys are, if it's tough for you to watch sexual assault in shows, do not watch this show.
And I have a little cards on the table moment as well, kind of showing my hand to everybody. I suggested this show after only watching the very minimum prerequisite 3.
And I could tell that immediately once the show got going.
After watching it all, I genuinely, outside of one 10-second scene, do not understand what you're talking about.
Like the entire fifth episode, there's multiple rapes.
No, there isn't.
Yes.
No.
There is.
Well, that's okay. And if there is, we're going to talk about it today because I think that this like plot point contextually works for the characters while awful to see on screen.
Oh,
much like murder.
Look, it was good for the show.
Right.
What I'm trying to tell you though is
you're giving the obligatory trigger warning.
There's people who it affects more, you know, strongly
of course.
Than people like us.
And I respect you for saying it.
Watch whatever. I'm just saying it was also a massive surprise because it didn't seem like it made a whole lot of sense at the time.
I beg to differ.
Don't even start with me.
Oh, I will. But we got to get into it first. We have to get into it first.
Oh, my God.
When we get there, we'll get there. But high level, can you describe for the students what world they're about to jump into if they're trying to look at this?
It's like a fucking desert wasteland type thing.
I think it takes place in the Middle East from all the geographical hints we get in the show. Because we have, quote unquote, the Far East, and people have talked about how most of Asia has been taken over by these Kagisters, which are humans that have been affected by some kind of genetic disease that has been spurred up inside of themselves to become these massive, and I mean like 30-foot long bugs. And
which I mean
yeah, no, I mean
based on physics, right? Like you can't just create enough, matter out of nothing.
It's just not enough matter to go around, my dude. It's
yeah,
just not
so
there. But you did mention in a small quip that you thought the show was at least solid or good. So what was the highlights? Like what about the show did you actually get from this?
Well, anyway, the show's kind of about this, I don't even know the guy's name right now.
Kido.
Kido.
Yeah.
Which is like K-I-D-O-W.
Yeah.
Which is like, come on, bro. and he's a, what do they call him?
Exterminators.
Exterminator, there we go.
Mm-hmm.
I watched this like a long time ago.
Like you said, an hour ago for me.
A couple weeks
it's
ago.
So fresh in my brain.
Help.
I got you.
and he is kind of, seems like he is tasked with defeating a lot of these insect cages and Kagisters that kind of break out. Kind of like, what do they call it? I guess you would just call it breakouts around the like human cities, right?
Yeah.
And he seems to be contracted by either the people that run the cities or by the military at certain times.
Yeah, so it looked as if that there was like a head of the current city they were in, which was called EO5. There is a very standardized nomenclature within the 30 years after these first Kagister outbreaks occurred. And in this city, there is this fat dude in the top of a tower who kind of seems to run all of the exterminator workings within the city itself. And I think that like the military actually didn't fancy them very much. Like,
yeah, so military is at super odds with the exterminators.
They hate them because he gets paid, buddy. He gets money for those heads, essentially. Every time he clocks one of them in the teeth, he gets a mad paycheck. As they put it, he gets to eat for a month for every one bug he takes out, which is a pretty sweet gig if you got the skills to pay the bills, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like a jealousy thing more than anything.
Yeah.
Is like the strife betwixt the two.
Ooh, betwixt. I like it. Okay. So these exterminators, their entire job for the last 30 years has been basically to go out mercenary style, take them out, and get their cash. Now, the story at large that we have here is on said mission to go do extermination work, Kaido and his buddy Jean, who's essentially a scavenger, he's just out there to drive his ass around and then find good tech. Like, he gets a little hot and bothered by finding a generator in the middle of nowhere. And also in the middle of nowhere, he finds a little girl who is crouching over what she would
have. Okay, so what really happened was,
what do you mean, really? I just watched it. I don't know what else to tell you.
They saw this car pass them.
Right.
And it was a guy driving his daughter, and a insect was attacking the vehicle. So Kido gets out of the vehicle, kills the insect above them. That car falls off a cliff.
Right, these are and all semantical minor plot points.
Sure.
Okay, but no, keep going. You're on the right track.
I know. And the car wrecks, the daughter gets knocked out, and the father gets bit by a bug. So, he's dead, for sure, for sure.
For sure, for sure,
and he talks to Kido, and he says, hey, I'm bringing my daughter, Illy, to this place. Please find her mother. That was it. Dies.
Boom. Yeah.
And Kido, I think it makes sense once you get farther into the story, but at this point, you're like, why the fuck would he just, like, instantly care like that?
He is a man who respects the promises of the dead. That is his kind of shtick, as you realize.
Right, but, like, the guy gave him zero info to go off
just
of.
The name of a woman and no, just, like, find
no,
her
he
mother.
He gave her first name.
Tanya. And that's all he had to go on was a woman named Tanya, go find her. And, I mean, Kido was never set up to be a good guy. I mean, shit, he punches her in the face in the first meeting they have together. Because
which is
she,
great.
Well, because she was about to go down there to re-see her father to prove he was dead or not believe he was dead. But, like, he's like, dude, you're about to go get killed yourself. And I have a dead man promise, like, asking me to promise to take care of his daughter. So he did what he did to make sure she didn't run down a cliff, essentially.
Yeah, and, like, the insect cage was, like, right there. They could see it.
Right,
so
right, right.
It would
right.
have been really dumb to go, like, get closer to it and whine and cry and stuff like that. Obviously, traumatic event for a young girl, but what they try to kind of show is exterminators need to have, like, zero
emotional stake.
Well, just, like, not. They need to be level. They can't be up and down all over the place, right? And mm-hmm. they have to. Yeah, I guess what you, I didn't hear you said stake. I was like, what are you talking
about? Emotional stakes
stake.
In
yeah,
anything.
So they
yeah.
can't like, they can't really like buy into situations that much. They can't like care about people and stuff like that because in their line of work, people die constantly.
Yeah.
And apparently when you have emotional ties to people, you start making dumb decisions. And I think that that kind of occurs in the real world, too.
Yeah, I'd say so. As the way he, Kido put it, your blade is dulled when swung with passion or anger. So it's about being detached. That's how you can perform. We've seen this trope in a lot of kind of edgier, maybe signing, you know, throw your emotions aside to make sure you complete with the job you need to be doing. And
Sasuke!
There it is. There it is. I was hoping somebody said it in the crowd. But I think as the show goes on, it the reason why I felt in at least the first three when I told you it could be down the middle for a pitcher ditch, because I felt like they opened up a lot of questions that were too big for them to answer. They opened up a lot of really big questions and they didn't do the work to answer them. What does it mean
in
to
three
be
three episodes? Wow.
It does. What does it mean to be human? What does it mean to validate human rights? And I'm like, whoa, these are some lofty ass questions. But then when I watch the whole thing, I'm like, man, they kind of, you know, I respect them for going bold and going in on the meta stuff and like trying to get really philosophical. But they didn't have the writing or there's something that wasn't there that made all of the answers that they provided for those questions really shallow. So the later episodes were kind of just like, man, I wish this could have been better, but I don't know. I mean, what did you think about, you know, one, Miss Mario? I love Miss Mario.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any real problems with the characters. They're all like okay.
Oh no, I'm just yeah, I mean all I'm saying is like the next thing they do is go back to where he finds his place to lay his head most days, and it's at this bar called the Garden Mario, and it's run by this 6'8" burly man looking crossdresser who I didn't really have a pronoun for until episode 12 actually, when there is a they called her a she, and I'm like, finally, thank you. Now I have something to call her on the show. But I think Miss Mario was my favorite character in this entire show.
Interesting.
I loved her.
Yeah, I mean, I had no real inkling toward her or against her. So
fair enough. Okay. But
she just played the like the conscience of the group, essentially.
That's a good point. Yeah, she was the moral compass for sure. Like she didn't really waver on her beliefs a lot, and there's a lot of characters around this story that changed as the story went on. Miss Mario, nah. She's a baller, and also handles a minigun like no one's fucking business. So good. So good.
Yeah, I mean, so Kido was kind of like this kind of tabula rasa, blank slate type character.
How'd you feel about his backstory? I think they really did a good job fleshing.
Yeah, it was extremely solid.
Yeah, they fleshed out a lot of characters in the show, I think, more aptly than a lot of other shows with the same runtime of 12 episodes. You know, Kido's a guy who, as a kid, really didn't have a home, was kind of brought in by this extermination or mercenary group of sorts that were trying to kill the Kagister bugs, and he was used as bait. So he was kind of hardened from day one.
Yeah, I mean, the kid was extremely, like, you know, emotionally vapid.
I mean, yeah, just from seeing what he
saw. As a result of kind of his role, mm-hmm. and he would listen to anything this priest guy said.
Lazarus was awesome.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's probably my favorite character.
He's up there too. I think there are moments where I this show, it had a lot of really good characters. There's Quasim, who is the soldier in the city they lived in that without any recognition was protecting the children that used to live in a part of town that he burnt intentionally to save the rest of the city from a Kagister outbreak. A lot of people considered those people murderers, but this Quasim guy was kind of in a path of repentance to do what he could for the children that still live there. He was the only other candidate for my favorite character, but Lazarus. Lazarus, Kido's mentor of sorts.
Father of sorts as well.
Father of sorts as well. Beautifully written. Beautifully written.
Yeah, so this show is kind of like really interested in trying to add these moral quandaries and these nearly impossible questions to answer. And I think they did a decent job of showing how people would react. Like, so basically imagine this. You've got this entire group of people having a breakout of insect Kagister-y or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So they're turning into big-ass insects. They throw them all into a church and burn the church down.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the families start blaming the military and saying, like, you are murderers, right?
What are you going to do?
The problem is...
Right.
It's stupid to have that opinion. Like, it is illogical to say you're a murderer because you stopped us all from getting eaten by insects.
Yeah, I mean, but that's kind of what you said before. This show does a good job of showing how people would react in these situations. Because remember that the Kagister infection, from moment of realization of infection to full-blown bug mode, is only 20 minutes. That's it. So you don't have people reconciling with the fact that they're now going to become a mindless monster bug. You have these people that, in that moment, they are instantly turning, and then people are trying to kill them before they get to that point because bullets and knives don't work on their carcasses and their exoskeletons from that point onward. So they become a bigger threat, so have to be dealt with before the full transformation begins or ends, really. And these humans are still kind of conscious in those times. So family members, friends, they're all kind of, you see it many times in the show, they advocate, don't kill them, don't kill them. They didn't do anything wrong. They're still my papa, mom, friend, whatever. So I can understand why these people would consider the military murderers, but it's definitely out of an emotional place, not logical. That's clear.
But yeah, it's just like...
You would think they would have reconciled by now that the second it starts, right?
It's not really like that. Like, it's just like, it's all about the morality of when is it okay to kill somebody. Calls into question euthanasia and things like that, where, mm-hmm. you know, these are terminally ill people. Is it okay to kill them for respite, right?
Yeah.
And I think these are, like, really lofty questions, and it's interesting to tackle it in such a way as this. I don't think it exactly landed as hard as it could have.
That was my big gripe.
But, you know,
They opened a lot of doors that weren't equipped to close.
Yeah,
I think.
It doesn't make sense though in a show like this, where all the citizens know when a Kagister outbreak happens, and then that that insect starts eating people or like biting people, the entire city is going to turn into Kagisters.
Right.
It doesn't make sense in that aspect that people would still be like, you know, when they see a transformation happening, still be like, oh, don't kill him.
This is my papa. How like, dare you?
Think about every zombie movie or show you've ever seen. The second someone gets bit, they get shot.
You know, this show tried to open the door of... No, that's actually a good analogy. Like, imagine putting all of this in the frame of a zombie. And that somebody's getting bit, they start to drool, they turn that, you know, kind of toxic green, their eyes glaze over, and you're like, no, don't shoot, they're still my papa.
Sallowed skin.
Absolutely not. You are going down double barrel style. Like, any zombie movie, that's how it goes. But
right.
But in this world, they did have one moment of definition where they say they were charging, I think it was Kaido or somebody, that you're labeled a murderer because they didn't see wings. Wings popping out of the back of the individual is kind of the de facto, now you don't are, they're not labeled as a human. They no longer have human rights. So they're allowed to be killed as a Kagister.
Right, but that was in response to earlier situations where, you know, some people would complain because they killed them so early into the Kagister transformation. And like, I understand there's going to be a line in the sand as to whether it's going to be legal, illegal to do so.
Right.
But I mean, when you start seeing this transformation, you know, it's at least from the Kasim one, it was really freaking obvious when he started to transform.
Yeah. And
so it's like, you would think immediately after you start seeing him transform, kill him.
And think of the merit of numbers, right? Like, the law of numbers states that they have never seen someone who started becoming a Kagister
and stopped becoming
a Kagister. They know this is a 100% death rate, like effective full-blown bug mode. They should know by now, the second you show any kind of skin hardening as the first signs of your limbs becoming so hard bullets don't penetrate it, that should have been the line. But they basically presented a moral quandary where there should not have been. There shouldn't have been one. And that is kind of my overarching complaint of this show, is that they introduce a lot of moral instability and gray area in the reactions of some of these characters, where I argue there should not have been in the first place. Like, clear action could have been done. And there's only a couple times where I would think Quasim was the only guy I think had a really nice moral grayness and a redemption arc, and he was the guy. I mean, there's that dude at the end that was calling out to, like, oh, these 10 years you followed me to try to make these Kagisters, like, controllable. I'm so sorry. I'm like, dude, fuck you, man. Like, you literally led assault, like, an army of men in for a decade of bullshit, and then now you're just like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. But I did want to make a couple comments on the visuals, because I know a lot of people online, I'm like, oh my god, the CGI looks so rough. How did you feel about the CGI, Ethan? I know you're working on your stand right now, but I can keep talking. So the CGI, I would argue, is maybe you son of a bitch.
It was okay.
I was helping you out.
Yeah, I know.
So how'd you feel?
How'd
you feel about the CGI?
Well, because unfortunately, when you pitched it to me, you like said how bad it was, and you're like, it's so interesting in a way that was like, it's clearly not good. But I would say the first episode took like a minute to get into, and then after that it was like whatever. Like it wasn't like, you know, Beastars CGI by any means.
Okay.
But it wasn't, I don't think, that far off of it to where, you know, all of a sudden I'm like, I can't even watch this show.
At first
the content of the show was a lot worse than the actual like finishings, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. And in the first three episodes when I pitched it to you, I would have maybe, you know, disagreed and said, no, this is not up to snuff CGI, that I would argue that like, if you're going to make a full CGI show, I think what I saw thus far should not have made the cut. But
it kind of sounded like a little bit of a gatekeeper.
Give me a second.
Here,
give me a second. after watching the entire series, I can say I respect Studio Kai, the people who made this show, and they don't have a lot of showings. They have like three shows, but their CGI in this, they're one of the few shows that not only took CGI and they're like, okay, we're going to use CGI. They made the conscious decision to do CGI, but they went full hog. They didn't shy away from the idea of using CGI. So what did you get because of that? Really dynamic camera angles, some really good effects. Like there's a fight near the end versus the half bug, half human guy and Kaido. They did a full 360 slow-mo pan, and that was beautiful, beautiful. And that's when I realized, like, this studio didn't shy away from the positives that CGI could bring. Even if aesthetically rough in the slow moments, what they did in the big moments were truly beautiful. I think they did CGI right. I don't think it was as clean as it could have been, but it was a very good use of CGI. I do think that they did a good job in a place that 2D couldn't have done in some of the shots that they had. So
I would just say something like the mannerisms were a little jerky was the only thing that I noticed.
You noticed that in the slow moments, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, there were definitely, like, when action hit, you notice how some CGI will kind of mimic frame skipping, right? They'll kind of actually take frames out to make it look like it's 2D cells. But this show, there are moments where there's like 60 FPS 4K, baby. I'm like, okay, they're not trying to shy away from what CGI could do, and I could not be more happy that they made those decisions. So, a little rough, yes. Was CGI a good choice? Also, yes. I am into it.
Let me ask you my last question before we wrap it up on this show.
I have one question as well. We'll do a final question switch. Let's go.
Would you have preferred it be zombies?
Kind of, yes.
Same.
Yeah.
There's something about insects and like how nasty they are. That would make me kill somebody that's like even just starting an outbreak. I would effing annihilate those idiots.
As a counterpoint, because they use insects, though, I like the way that they use the queen concept in this show.
Yeah, I think guess. Here's my second question.
Okay. I didn't realize there was a second. You got to help me with that.
The follow-on.
Okay, the follow-on.
Would we not have armor-piercing rounds that would just blast through those sons of
bitches? Okay, thank you so much, because I was thinking, like, all you need are tanks. Would you not over 30 years invest in tank manufacturing?
Well, they have tanks, but, like, we have Stinger missiles.
I'm saying, yeah.
We have cruise missiles, bro.
You gotta remember that 2/3 of humanity was taken out by these things. That was an initial line, so...
That's where, like, you know, I think zombies could overthrow the world, because that's more of, like, an outbreak that has a like biological cause.
Yeah.
Right. But this seems like it is it's like a dormant thing that's you have to be bit or something like that.
Is it sudden? That's the thing. Like I didn't get an explanation about what triggers these things ever.
Doesn't matter. We got cruise missiles, bro.
We got TOWs. That's all we need. We got the biggies. But my question to you was, did you feel like this was an attack on Titan clone?
It was probably more like Attack on Trains.
Which actually, the show is called Cabinary of the Iron Fortress, which that, I think it's more of a clone of that. So it's like a two-stage separated clone of Attack on Titan.
Right, right.
A lot of these notes were definitely taken from Attack on Titan. The three-stage city, the sense of helplessness in the face of the threat, the one dude who seemed to be the merging of the two. There's definitely a lot of elements taken from these. I don't know if it worked to a great effect, but I think it was useful to use, to borrow.
I mean, it was nothing new, right? Like in any show like this, there's going to be that one creature that is like a mix between the two.
Definitely. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, because they borrowed so many notes, this show is definitely nothing new under the sun.
It's reductive.
It's reductive. I will say, I did, like I mentioned, the queen element, that since they're bugs, a natural progression is that there would be a queen. That felt like a natural introduction of an OP entity in this world. The little girl, Irie, spoiler alert, you're going to get him. Illy, excuse me. She was born to be a queen of these bugs. So she was like Eren from Attack on Titan being the coordinate. She can control the bugs, and that is a very natural feeling OP entity. I did like that a lot. So I'm into that.
Well, I hated her as a character, but
I didn't mind her too much.
She was so whiny and annoying. And yes, she's a little girl, but like, I just need them to not do this anymore. I can't stand a character that's going to cry on screen for 5 episodes.
Do we want to bring up the elephant in the room that you mentioned earlier? Because I feel like we need to address it. The sexual assault stuff and why that actually is, can, like, we can do a Black Lagoon is pretty easy to wrap up because it's so good, but.
Okay, that's fair. Okay, so in episode 5.
Yes.
They show essentially Kido's past where his entire exterminator squad got killed, and then his dad was basically Kagisterized.
And he took him out without hesitation, and because he did so quickly, he was labeled a murderer for doing so. Tried to be picked up by the military, but he escaped before they can get their clutches on his prowess.
But so essentially at that point, though, there was a battle between all the exterminators and the military, and mm-hmm. they were like literally constantly fighting.
Yes.
And there was a situation where they went into the city because they were called on by the military, and the military started shooting like howitzers at it.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
Artillery. Like,
they went full and hog.
Collapsed the city around the exterminators. And he was the only one, him and his father, that survived because his father saved him. Or priest, Lazarus, whatever you want to call him.
Yes.
And Lazarus takes him back to the some church.
Hideout church, whatever.
And kind of explains to him about it, his like life before Kido, like with his family and his children and all that stuff, and like what drove him to this. And then he basically like does this weird like repent thing where he's like, Kido, don't be like me, essentially.
Right.
Which is like the strangest thing to tell a kid that you've saved from death, but
and
also
has been following you ever.
Yeah,
since hanging like on your every word,
the beginning of life, and yeah. then also like then immediately starts Kagisterizing, and it's like, could you like
very convenient?
Yeah, very yeah. convenient for a plot to like really f this kid up,
and f him up. It did. He right. was definitely scarred emotionally.
So basically, imagine like having literally nothing left.
He had nothing.
Like, all his friends are dead, essentially. Okay. My friends are dead. And that man's dead, dead. And also, like, his essentially father. And so a lot of his group actually did survive, and they're talking about they need to find a successor.
Right.
Like Lazarus. And they all, like, they're like, we're going to make it Kido so that we can just kill him off and then get a, like, basically a regular succession line after that.
Right.
But what he ends up doing is he goes back to his, to Lazarus's
little brothel situation.
Yeah. Mistress.
Kara
from a brothel.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically like breaks down in her arms and then
she max on him.
Yeah. Max to the extreme on him.
And then
sexually assaults him.
Listen,
but
okay, listen.
In a way,
I want you to look at that scene. I didn't see
Ricky.
Any. No, look at that. He curled up into her, and he and her into him. There wasn't a denial anywhere in there. Like,
yeah, he's 13, bro.
So where do they say he was 13? Okay, fine. Okay, fine.
He's
fine.
Like a little kid. That's
fine.
That's the issue.
I'm taking this here. After he left, it was only 2 years after that. Stated by Petrov that he left that night and went right to Garden Mario, and and that's where he, that's where Miss Mario found him. So he was 15 in this show, by the way. So when he had that scene in episode 5, that the exact lines were, "Hey, Illy, you come to give me pity for this. I just killed somebody I know. Isn't this how I feel better?" That's all he's ever known.
I get it. I'm not saying that it like doesn't
right.
make sense. I'm saying it was 2 sexual assaults.
Right. 3, if you want to count Illy in the elevator with the 2 soldiers at the very end, who basically feels her up, kind of.
I don't recall that, but
okay. Well, that he's like, let's
there's
play.
There's 3 sexual assaults in the show.
Let's play with her, and then the elevator opens, and they get slaughtered, which is pretty rad. But
of course, it is.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying,
contextually, for a character, it made sense. It's not the easiest thing to see on screen.
I just don't know the necessity of it. Is why I don't really get. There's definitely another way to deal with that. And like, I know
what's funny, because you told me that and I was like, okay, I'm gonna look out for it, but I definitely need context. Is it tragedy usage in narrative needs to have proper context, or else it's not just useless in the story, it's abrasive on screen. It was an ugly thing to see out of Kido, but it wasn't unfounded. It's the only way he knows how to reconcile and comfort anybody or anything in a situation where they have just killed somebody they know, because the last time he did that and someone tried to comfort him, that was the way they did it. That's the only way he knew how.
Like I said,
yeah,
it fit the story well.
I think it's important to give context.
It fit the character.
I know.
Well.
Yeah, but it was an ugly thing to see on screen.
But I literally looked it up afterwards, and I was like, "Did what I think just happened?"
Yes, and I think
everyone was like losing their shit on Reddit and stuff.
Right. I think the uglier part is how okay she was after. She was just like that. Like
That's what I'm saying.
That was the shittiest part.
It was not a thing to her at all. She was just like, no, bruh.
To the point where she told everyone in the bar, oh, he's an exterminator. I know he's wild. He can do whatever he wants to me because it's him. And everyone's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
That's not cool to say. And everyone looks at him and he goes, I'm going to go somewhere else to eat. And everyone's like, he fucking did it, didn't he? And
right.
It's like, ew, that's a little weird to me. But,
and then like, I don't know. This is maybe just a personal qualm.
I think it's important to have.
But I think in when an episode like this is going to happen,
it's important to let people know.
Just put a little like blurb in the beginning of the show.
Okay, so you're saying that the trigger warning should be on the show itself.
Just for like it, like I said, it does not affect me one bit, but I'm saying to some people it definitely does.
Of course. And this is
what if you're just trying to watch an anime for fun and
right.
this happens in the middle and you're like flashback to experiences you've had. That's
right.
So messed up.
And this is a PSA to everybody that if you're going to pitch a show, don't pitch it at 3 episodes because you don't know what's at episode 4 onward.
Yeah.
The same thing happened with Banana Fish.
And yeah.
I will never live that one down. So at the end of the day, Ethan, all things considered, what would your rating be? 100? Oh, one out of 100 Kagisters. I know it's a toughie.
I would like 68 Kagisters out of 100.
Interesting. Okay, I thought you were gonna go lower. I was gonna say straight 70. I think there's a lot of flaws. I think they opened a lot of doors that they weren't prepared to close. I respect them for going bold. I respect them for their use of CGI, and some of the characters are really cool. Not all of them, but some of them are pretty cool. So they had a lot of good ideas here.
Sometimes it's hard for me to see a character who I know is like the god of the show and they're like taking shit.
Yeah, right?
So like when people like talk shit to like the character you know is an absolute thug lord, it's like...
What do you do there?
I don't know if I would react the same way. I'd probably just like show them my power really fast
yeah.
and be like, stop fucking with me, dum-dum.
Nothing personnel, kid.
Dummy.
Okay. I mean, so is this a pitch for you? I know my answer.
This is like you're at the absolute end of your list. It's like Sirius of the Jaeger. It's not a good show.
I actually would call this a ditch by merit of I would not pitch this to someone else. This is an enjoyable experience for me.
Well, you did pitch it to somebody else.
Right, because I know it's you, and I know you have to watch it on an academic sense, but if I were someone else in the real world and pitch it to
some actual person,
some actual human being that doesn't have a Weebology degree,
of course,
I don't think I'd pitch it to him because I think there's a lot here that requires a seasoned palate. And I think after seeing all of this, I don't know if everyone could, you know, this is one of the ones that if you flip your brain off in a certain way, you might probably really enjoy this. Like, I enjoyed it, but I had to flip my brain off and not be analytical. But unfortunately,
that's very true.
Unfortunately, I had to be so for a show. But if I was in the fortunate situation to, oh, this is a cool show.
Also, what's the fucking point of a city with walls if there's flying bugs?
Bro, that's actually brilliant. And they never explain the different, there's like 4 different type of insects.
Yeah.
How do the other 3 come about?
I don't know.
The little
man.
Ones, how do they come about? I don't understand it.
They did bad.
They did some bad on explanation stuff, but if you're a seasoned anime fan and you want to watch something you don't want to think about, then watch this show. It's quite enjoyable.
You say that, but there's like they try to make you think a lot. So
that's, isn't that funny though? They try. That's the thing. It's a show that if you don't think it's good, but they can't help but ask the big questions. And you're like, okay, now I have to think about the shit and anything under the surface. You're like, right. Damn it, God. Like, all right, you made me do this. And when I looked, I hated it. So what are you going to do? So, but still 70. Good ride.
Yeah, 68.
Enjoyable. What are you going to do?
Maybe a 66 now that I think about it.
And now...
maybe 63.
Oh, the suddenly drop. Are we gonna, do I hear 60? 60, anybody? 60.
Going once.
Going twice.
Going twice.
Sold for 63. But let's end on a brighter note.
Oh, yeah.
A much, much better show, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, it's a classic.
Black Lagoon. Holy shit.
Black Clover. Yeah. So we haven't talked about this show in a while.
Is it coming back yet? Boruto was announced.
July 7th.
Okay, cool. Boruto is coming back. I think it... oh, July 7th as well, maybe.
Yeah, I think okay. They're both periodic, aren't
they? Yes.
Interesting.
Okay. Funny how that works. But we're talking about Black Lagoon, a Madhouse special from 2006. I watched the first season, but boy, howdy am I watching the second immediately when I can. Probably before I go do 4th of July specialties, because yes, we are reporting this and recording this in a time travel situation. So this show, it's about a guy named Rock, and I'm going to call him Rock because everyone else does, and I forget his full name because it's not important. He
Rakugo?
Is that really the last name? Rakugo. Well, he's a basic businessman, a man just kind of getting by the skin of his teeth. You know, he's got a batting cage, he has a place to drink, and he has
a batting cage.
That's what he said in the show. He said, as long as I got a batting cage and a place to drink my beer, I'm good. But he is kind of living a humdrum businessy life.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, humdrum businessy life. And his company sends him on a little travel mission he doesn't necessarily fully understand the implications of. And he is kind of picked up halfway through by a interesting crew of individuals called the Lagoon Company. Now, his mission, unbeknownst to him, was to transport some very sensitive data, to which the company responds, instead of, hey, let's get our precious businessman lackey back, no, let's send a fucking chopper after his ass to just sink the whole ship, because it's clear he's not coming back. And in the face of this betrayal, he helps this crew dispose of this chopper in a very creative way and join this little mercenary courier group and starts his adventure as a life as a kind of a thug, frankly. And Ethan, I got to say thank you so much for
hey,
pitching.
No problem,
this
man.
One was, I cannot believe it went under my radar. First, it's by Madhouse. You may know this name by people who did Hunter x Hunter 2011, the first season of One Punch Man, and a couple other big fatties. I was looking up other ones, but the other ones are bones. But
One Outs.
You keep telling me to listen to.
It's very good.
But I will say, first and foremost, the aesthetic is one of the best aesthetics I've seen in probably the last like 8 months, and I mean that.
Please expound upon that point.
So, this show oozes OG.
It does.
It does. But it's got that special sauce that only, I think, Madhouse and maybe one or two other studios can really give a show. Remember, this came out in 2006. Redline came out in 2009 from them. And then Hunter x Hunter came out in 2011. So this, in my mind, started their heyday, their golden age. Maybe even earlier. But I mean, Madhouse has this special way of putting this OG aesthetic with also this fluidity that you would expect from modern anime. I mean, there were moments of Sakuga in the show that, you know, shit, it's 14, 15 years old and it's beautifully done, beautifully animated and storyboarded, and it just looked amazing. I mean, I could tell anyone, hey, watch an older anime, and they're like, oh, they all sound bullshit, and they all look so dated, and I would shove this show in their face and say, you look at this right now, and you tell me this feels dated. It didn't. It didn't feel dated at all. This could have released a couple years ago, and I'd be like, yep, that makes sense.
Yeah, I loved it. It had the, like I said in the original Pitcher Ditch, the like megalobox aesthetic, in my opinion.
So RoboPat and I had a conversation about this, and I think,
oh god,
no, it was a good convo, but megalobox, it almost as if megalobox looked at a show like Black Lagoon and then applied modern tools to recreate the aesthetic.
Yes, agreed.
But there's a certain something from not seeing any CGI, maybe a couple cars here and there, but even the cars, hand-drawn, beautifully done.
I don't think there was any CGI anywhere.
There was like two cars, I think, like maybe a big Jeep, and that was it. So it's weird to see in 2020 an anime that was just every single second from start to finish was hand-drawn, and it was beautifully done. Character wise, I love these characters. Who do you think was your favorite of the Lagoon Company?
I mean, Revy.
Revy, yes.
Yeah, obviously Revy, right?
So I didn't start thinking that way, actually. I thought she was kind of a shallow, edgy character at first. Again, only the first 12. There's probably more to her that I don't know. You gonna get comfy right now?
I'm even comfier.
You going
now.
Full comfy? All right, I respect
that. I'm just gonna go ahead and lay down.
Hell yeah. I need your input every once in a while because okay. I think my favorite character might be Dutch.
I was gonna say it's got to be Dutch or Balalaika.
But
the Russian.
See, who do I resonate with most is probably Benny.
Because he's a tech loser.
Of course, of course. I feel him. So let me break down this crew for you guys real quick. We got Rock, the old businessman who actually turns out to be an OG negotiator. Like he's like, because he's kind of the embodiment of, as he said in the show, not everything can be solved with a gun. And as a mercenary courier group for the underground seediness of the world, that's weird to hear for most people. But his negotiation skills, as he buds over time, at least in the first 12 episodes, are quite good. He de-escalates situations kind of masterfully. And there's Revy, who is the guns of the group for the most part. She's very skilled, but she's like a Chinese girl from the slums and... I don't know. She felt a little overplayed at first.
No, she's American, bro.
She said she was a Chinese. She was a Chinese slum. Look it up. But she said that, like, what do you like, when they're going to look for a Nazi painting on a submarine 57 meters under the water? She has a conversation with Rock about her past, saying that when I grew up on the streets of China, she's this Chinese girl that were quote unquote. Love and God were not very abundant on those streets, and all I had were money and guns.
Revy is a Chinese-American mid to late 20s from Chinatown, Manhattan, near Mott Street.
This might be a first. We're both right. We're both... She's Chinese.
Yeah.
So she, but she's from... Let's say she's from the slums, but there's Dutch, the man in charge. He is the leader of the Lagoon Company, this big, burly black guy in shades and... Just the way he interacts with everybody and can finesse all of the group to do what he needs them to do without necessarily forcing anybody to do anything is great.
Oh, Rakuro Okajima.
Rakuro Okajima is Rock's OG name.
Sorry.
No, you're good. No, yeah, Rakuro.
Sorry, folks.
You're all good.
Just had a little Google break.
And then Benny, my favorite long-haired blonde dude. He's the mechanic of the group and doesn't shoot for shit, but I love him for that because I'm not a violent guy. I'm a lover, not a fighter. I'd say.
Yeah, they could have done more with his character, though. Like, I feel like he was definitely, like...
Seeing all 24, you still agree with that?
Second to third tier type character.
Yeah, okay. But this show is very good with, in terms of the power of femininity. There's a lot, lot of strong women in this show. My favorite character outside of that group...
Roberta.
She is like the Mary Poppins of death.
Yeah,
like
she's awesome.
She walks in. She's a maid for one of the big South American families that comes after Garcia, one of the sons of a lower family. And she's like ex-like guerrilla warfare chick. And she blows people away with a gun that looks like both an umbrella and another one that looks like a suitcase. She's literally a Mary Poppins of death. It's beautiful. Even the scene where she fights in the bar in Ranipur is set to beautiful Spanish flamenco guitar. And that's probably my favorite scene in the first season. It's so good.
I'm glad you like that because that was also one of my major favorite scenes. Like basically her whole like arc of like trying to get Garcia back.
Yeah.
Was awesome.
She's like fucking Terminator, dude.
She really is.
Like, she gets thrown around off cars into shipping containers, dents the fucking things, and gets up and still has a gunfight and a fist fight after
right.
that.
Yeah, she's a thug, absolutely.
I love her character, and I don't know much about second season. I would like for her to make a return, but I know there's only 24 episodes in this show. I would say the plot's very good. You kind of equated it to Jormungand, where it's kind of like a heist of the week almost for a while. And they started to do like two-parters where there's like the triads were kind of making a drop, and they managed to get certain documents against the U.S. embassy. And, you know, they started with like a heist a week, which I think is a good way to get people to be savvy to how they do operations. And then as they go through the next couple episodes, heists take a couple episodes each to finish, because they get more and more complicated. Things go a little more and more south each time. And that's where I think a big highlight of the show is. The pacing is beautiful. Every heist is a little more fucked up than the last. Something goes more wrong each time. And they manage to get out of it each time. They don't always go right. Like, the second shit goes south, they're like, we're out, peace. And the next two episodes are them just trying to get out of a shitty situation. So, I mean, man, like, I was shook. I mean,
I want to say something, but I can't remember if this was in season one or two, so I don't want to spoil something.
I understand it, but
I'm trying to look it up really fast.
I will say season one ends after they finish the work for Mr. Chang, where they give the briefcase contents to the U.S. secret folk. And I think the last thing I will say, that it's a really good pacing thing in character development, is Rock's development. Because you remember, he's a businessman that was thrusted into this world of black marketry and seediness. And at first, he was very unequipped. You can even argue at the end of the first season, he's still very unequipped. But his contributions is the second season.
Yeah.
Like I said, we can maybe have a quip about it a couple episodes from now. And we can bring it back up, but
oh, you're gonna love it! It was okay. So sick.
So that's what I'm saying, is that the character development in the show, Revy being this edge lord that kind of turns a little more broadly thinking because of Rock. There's a scene where he even like is at point blank range at Revy's gun because he says some shit to her, and he kind of grows a pair and says some shit to her at a cafe in Ranipur, and then. Like, she is holding a gun to his head straight up, and then you hear a gunshot, and you have his hand on her 9mm sword cutlass, and he has a cut on his head. He moved the gun out of the way in time. The balls on this dude. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, their relationship was, like, the most important to the whole show.
Definitely.
'Cause it was, like, kind of a combating of two, like, lifestyles in general.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
You're not there yet, but it gets even more interesting.
But what we did see is that he's saying, you are so up your own ass about, oh, I have suffered. You never considered the fact that any lifestyle can experience suffering. Suffering you actually don't know about. That's something that he presents to her and opens her eyes a bit, just from where I'm at. So,
yeah. Rakuro was kind of annoying, though. Like, in my opinion.
How'd you figure?
I think he whined a lot at Revy in the same way that he just said, you know, you can't understand my life either, or my sorrows. He can't do the other thing, you know, the other way around.
Right.
So he's really presuming that his sorrows and, you know, having something and then losing it is a lot better or a lot worse in some opinion than
never having
in the first place and living her tough life.
The old Sasuke Naruto dilemma, frankly.
Right. And so, I don't know. Like, I loved Revy because I think all her reactions were very, like, realistic.
For someone that grew up the way she did, absolutely. Yeah.
And I think Rock was, like, the biggest wuss for, like, 90% of the first season.
And that's the thing. But there's that moment, like, there are moments that he has where it's like, I can't do what you do. I haven't been through the stuff you have. But suffering is not meant to be comparative. It's meant to be understood, right? And because of what he went through, he can negotiate. That scene where they're in the nunnery, in the church, the ripoff church, where this I love Yolanda.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sister Yolanda is this a nun dealing arms, and they come to pick up a shipment, and it turns into guns pointing at other guns very quickly, but it's Rock and Yolanda sitting down having tea, discussing very civilly, and him making a pass saying, I know something that you should probably know about. We have ties with this. You know, if you don't kind of give us what we want, we can make this really difficult for you. And even she recognizes, work on your timing, but you kind of a thug. You, Revy, should probably learn that not everything can be solved with a gun. And I love that theme because he introduced that into this world, into her world specifically.
Yeah, I think Dutch is more of the, you know, negotiator previous to Rock's introduction.
Yeah.
But he definitely is a little more heavy-handed with his tactics, and things yes. devolve into gunfire very frequently.
Oh, the whole scene with Mr. Chang and Revy, like, the gunplay in this show is fucking awesome.
Mr.
Like,
Chang.
Mr. Chang and Revy teaming up to get out of their kind of secret hideout when they've been discovered that they have a certain briefcase. Their escape is sakuga, beautiful, just great. So, God, I can't gush more about this show. If I have any problems with it,
you gotta watch season two, bro.
I'm going to. But I mean, literally, I'm going to after this. But my only gripe is I found Revy, at least in season one, to be bit more, I'm just Edge and that's it for me, a little bit. I was like,
you'll love season two then.
Perfect. Okay. Then that's all I need to hear.
She's going to soften up a bit.
That's all I want to see. That's all I want to hear. I want Rock to harden like a rock and Revy to soften up like a river. That's all I want. That's all I need. So what would you rate this show? I know my answer.
I mean, I really enjoy it. I think it's a masterpiece of its time. I think it's iconic.
Mm-hmm.
I would put it 92 cutlasses out of 100.
Ooh. I was going to put it at 90 Duchesses out of 90.
Okay.
Well, I'm saying...
Wow, 2 points. I'm going to fight you over it.
No way.
How dare you not...
I demand my two. No, but I think...
You'll like it after...
That's what I'm saying.
You'll rate it higher. I anticipate it.
I'll come back. You know what, students? I'll come back with a follow-up review after I watch season two, for sure. So, we have some good shows on our hands. I would call it... Oh. Easy pitch, by the way. I pitched it to my brother, and I think he's going to watch it.
Unequivocal pitch.
Unequivocal pitch. It is an undeniable pitch.
Indeed.
Whereas, I think Kagister, it really depends on the person.
Like I said, the absolute last anime on your list.
But for some people who like the Attack on Titan subgenre of kind of, I wouldn't even call it a thriller, just action, signing, there is something here for somebody. I think if you explain it to somebody in the way that I did to Ethan, they would probably like it, but you got to know your audience. So I like these suggestions. I need to give you more down the middles. I like the idea of it going either way because I like the idea of deliberation.
Yeah, I'm kind of using this as a, let's get Ricky to watch all the masterpieces he missed.
And I want to use this as make Ethan watch all the shit I want to not watch, so maybe he'll tell me to watch it or not.
Right, and like, I think that's, you know, a problem. I'll be honest.
I don't think it's a problem.
It's a little bit of fucked up.
We presented this, and I found a loophole. You get to be my guinea pig of sorts.
Yeah, it's a little fucked up.
A guinea pig for me.
I'm just trying to get you to, you know, get all the basics down, you know?
Media pig. Okay. Yeah. But I mean, I think, honestly, that's all of them. We have a couple things we wanted to mention at the end. Me and Ethan did a very special interview with somebody, Jacqueline, of a site called Senpai Box, if I got all that right.
Yes.
I'm just making sure. She had contacted us about interviewing us about our origins and what our thoughts are about anime right now. So the site looks clean. The blog is clean. Go check us out. We did it on audio. It's not just written, but also audio. I don't know if there's any written aspect to it. That's all up to Jacqueline. She's a huge fan. Shout out to you. Thank you for listening.
Appreciate you for having us on.
Go check that out and check out her site. All this stuff looked pretty cool. What else do we got? Patreon?
Oh, snap, folks.
Oh, shit. We do have a Patreon now. And it's not just your daddy's Patreon. This is a full-fledged, you-get-shit-in-the-mail Patreon.
Yeah.
So let's run it down. $1 tier. Your basic tier, right?
Yeah, it's a basic tier.
What do you get for that shit?
Well, now that you ask, you get, so what we're going to do is we're going to make a Patreon exclusive Discord. Yep. And that may not be the smartest thing long term for us to like build a insane community.
We're all about transparency here. And we just like, you know, you're buying into us. We want to make sure that you have a direct line to us.
Right.
You know, we respect your, you giving to us. We want to give back to you. So,
and like, just like we're saying with transparency, it's a lot about time, right? Like if we had a group with all of our listeners, I just don't know how engaged we could really be.
Right. We have,
so I'd
we
like
do have
to be
to
more engaged with, you know, a more select group, right?
Right. But this isn't to say, like, you know, if you want to just drop $1 a month, I don't know how that works out every day, but I think it's around 3 cents a day, something like that. Maybe 3.33 cents or something like that.
Maybe.
To get into one of the dopest, slickest Discords you've ever seen, dude. Ever.
Well, I'm not going to like...
I'm overhyping it.
Yeah.
For the sake of overhyping.
But the plan with that is, you know, we're going to put our guests on there.
Yes. Anyone we have, they're getting special invites. You get to talk directly to our guests. You can talk right to us about episodes we did do, we should do, an anime you want to recommend. We got it.
For sure. And then our $3 tier,
mm-hmm.
There's going to be a high quality Weebology podcast sticker.
Oh, yes. And as your designated creative director professor over here, any designs I come up with haphazardly will be posted to said Discord for you guys to be able to deliberate if you want them as stickers or even further merch, which we'll discuss. But... Like we want to make sure we know that you guys know that everything you get at higher tiers, you get from the lower tiers, obviously, as well. We want to make that very clear. If you're at the $3 tier, you also get the Discord, but you also get sweet stickers from yours truly, designed by Professor Ricky.
Indeed. And also at the $3 tier, you then unlock exclusive content.
Oh my gosh, you brought it up? Yes.
What do you mean? Was I not supposed to?
No, I was trying to like bounce back and forth.
Oh, okay.
It, but, like,
fair enough.
Cool.
Yeah. So we are, I think we've mentioned it, but syllabus sidebar is what we're going to basically make our bonus content external to the podcast.
Yes. So this is essentially a show. Syllabus sidebar will be part our planning for the future. So you get an inside look about me and Ethan shooting the shit about like shows we're thinking about doing an episode on, you know, extra content we're thinking about doing, or even any designs or something that kind of pertains to the future of the show. And also riffing about non-anime stuff. Tech,
yeah.
Current world things, anything we want to talk about.
Well,
just
probably not current world things.
Well, not this current, but maybe when the things get a little better in a future current, we'll definitely talk about those.
Yeah. Lighthearted current things.
Lighthearted
maybe.
Current for sure. We're going to keep it light for you
but
guys.
But like other fandoms as well. Like,
yes, for sure.
If you've ever seen our lab here, we've got a bunch of random shit around from different fandoms. So
literally a Lord of the Rings sword. So you know this guy is
a wand from Harry Potter.
Oh, it's good. And a couple prints from, oh shit, that's anime. Never mind. Yeah. We have a show about that already. But let's move up the tiers to $5. For $5, you not only get the Patreon, you get the stickers, you get the syllabus sidebar, but you also get a limited edition yearly enamel pin that I will be designing as well. And these will be very limited run. It will only be given to that tier and the one above it.
The $25 tier.
Oh my gosh. This is the big boy. This is what we call the professor tier. This, you get to be a certified Weebology professor. You get the Discord. You get the syllabus sidebar. You get the stickers. You get the pin. But you also get 2 t-shirts a year in the size of your choosing, designed by yours truly. We have maybe like 3 or 4 designs already.
Yeah.
Kind of mapped out. And I'm talking with a buddy of mine who works for a clothing company, and she's got the inside scoop on how to get these printed. So you get the $25 tier, you get literally the full shebang. I also, just as a preview to syllabus sidebar, I kind of was thinking about making a Weebology professor certificate, like a diploma.
Yeah, sure.
And handing that out with the $25.
Yeah, why not?
I'd be into it. You know what? We're throwing the diploma in too. You get the diploma. You're a professor if you get $25 a month. You get the full Monty. So that's the breakdown of Patreon. Go ahead and sign up. and you will literally be helping us put right back into the show, you know, better mics, more merch, more ways to make the show better, more content. It's all 100% going back.
Giveaways, stuff like that as well.
Definitely giveaways for sure. So all the stuff that you give us, we funnel right back into the show to host and keep giving you guys content. So, and it, we only could have ever gotten this far because of the students. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for tuning in every week.
Thanks, fam.
Thank you for coming to class. The teacher with no class is just a dude with knowledge. Or a woman, I guess. It's 2020 after all. I can't be out here saying, dude, what am I kidding? I can't be doing that.
Just a homie with a mic.
Just a homie with a mic. But on top of all that, we got the basic things to shout out. If you want to listen with your eyes and your ears, coming over to YouTube. Hi, I know everyone. I've gotten DMs. I know. I've been busy. I have a lot of clients now, but I have most of the backlog of videos
people
rendered.
Been DMing you about the video?
I have three people DMing me like, where's the video?
Damn.
And I'm like, I'm
dog.
So sorry. I've been working. I have West Coast clients now. So like they want to do a 4 p.m. meeting. That's 7 p.m. That sucks.
I tell them no.
Well, I can't. Sadly.
I think you absolutely can.
Hey, man, I'm there for my clients. Because I'm there for my students.
7 p.m.
I'm there
meeting.
For my students. I'm there for my clients. I'm there for my people. Yeah, I've had a couple 7 p.m. meetings.
It's then been... I'd tell them, all right, office, I'm now doing a split shift where I come in at 10.
That's actually what I've started. I've proposed that. And they're like, since all of your clients are West Coast, they're like, you can come in at like 10:30. I'm like, are you serious? So I might start editing videos in the morning, grab a cup of Joe and...
That's
hit that Premiere
lit.
Pro, baby.
If that you was listen- actually a sick rhyme.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. So if you want to listen with just your ears and actually get content when we say we're going to release it, go to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher Podcast, or CastBox, or anywhere else you get your podcast.
And please fixed. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It'll really help our channel grow.
It helps us jump onto the recommendeds for other anime podcasts so we get more students. We want a full-blown seminar situation. come check out some visual content on our Instagram at weebology.podcast. We got memes on memes on news. Can we tell them who we gave the keys to the kingdom to?
Not like fully gave the keys.
No, not as not. We did.
We have added Pat Bot to the moderation team.
Robo Pat himself is now our meme extraordinaire, and he threw up a couple bangers. I can't deny.
Yeah, two on the same day, so a little concerned about that.
Yeah, we'll have to work with him on his timing, but you know what? He's got the chops. He's got what we need.
Yeah, totally. He's Patrick, if you're listening, I really appreciate it, bud.
You're getting
literally nothing out of this, so we
coal,
appreciate it.
We will pressure to make out a diamond. Know the diamond you can be.
Work on your hashtags there, bud.
For sure. But if you want to give us a shout, you know, do it on our DMs. Give us a shout on our Gmail, weebologypodcast@gmail.com, or our Twitter, weebologyp. You know, give us some anime. We do have a growing list. We now have a stout enough list. I think we should start going through them, and you can hear about it on the syllabus sidebar.
Oh, snap. A little
oh
bit
my
of
God.
Necessity.
But I think, honestly, that's everything for today. I'm Ricky.
And I'm your favorite professor, Ethan.
And that hurt. And this has been Weebology.
Deuces.
How dare you hurt me in this way, dude? That hurt. Oh.